today and worship the Lord. Especially, I guess, as thinking of last Sunday was Easter, and we thought of the death and resurrection, and we're serving a risen Lord, so we have a lot to be thankful for. Glad for the presence of each one. I see Brother Silas there. Can you hear? Yeah. Appreciate the thoughts, and I guess I enjoy Sunday school. Where's the young man? And Dennis, it's good to have the young men up here teaching and teaching Sunday school and the devotions to each part. For a message this morning, my mind was thought and I'm directed more on compassion, the thought of compassion, the word compassion and how it's used. And I was blessed where Leland read there out of the, where Jesus was moved with compassion when he seen all the people. And I guess it's just a blessing, you know, and we all enjoy compassion. You know, I'm going to turn to Lamentations and read a bit there. You know, we serve a great God, and he's full of compassion. In Lamentations 3, it said, "Is that it is of the Lord's mercies that we're not consumed, because his compassions fail not. They are new every morning. Great is thy faithfulness." Well, what a loving God. A God that has compassion on me. You know, though I fail, he still has compassion, and he wants us to get up and keep going. He has compassion on the young and the old and all of us alike and the whole world. I guess that's a beautiful thought, too. It's not just me and it's not just our group here. It's the whole world. And in the whole chapter, and I'm not going to take time, read a whole chapter of Lamentations 3 sometime. It's a beautiful chapter. And the first verse says, "I am a man that has seen affliction by the rod of his wrath." And then later on in verse 32 it says, "And though he cause grief, yet he will have compassion according to the multitude of his mercies." We know life is not easy, and I believe in the early church, the Christians, Paul writing to the different churches said, you know, don't be surprised. Persecutions are going to come. You know, just because you're a Christian doesn't mean that God's not going to test you. God's not going to let these bad things happen to you. Don't be surprised. You know, I've told you all this, and I believe we know that this morning, that God is a loving God. God will give mercy and grace to us as we have our, as and when we have our needs, and I trust that we go to Him, and it's and that we understand that in all that, how God's love and compassion work. As I think of that, then we think of the word compassion. You know, it's, you think of love. You know, you could say, well, we could just have a sermon on love, and we could, you know. But love is seems like something, you know, we kind of develop. And the love of God is for all people, whether they met Him or not. But for us as creatures or human, it's a little harder to love someone we don't know. You know, we just say it that way. It's a little harder to feel responsible for a city that we don't even know, you know. Kind of maybe like Jonah when he was told to go to Nineveh, you know. Well, who's Nineveh, you know? So the word compassion is, maybe I want to think of it a little different than that. And I could turn to Luke chapter 10. Maybe get a little picture there. But, you know, the Bible brings out that, you know, you're to weep with those that weep. That takes a compassionate heart. It talks about rejoicing with those that rejoice. And it talks about praying for those that are in prison, as in prison they're also yourselves. I mean, so it's, but that's a hard one. I thought of that. You know, I've never been in prison. So how do I relate to the dear brothers that are in prison for their faith, or anybody that's in prison? How do I relate to that? It's going to take some compassion and thought and visitation maybe to understand, you know, what is a prison? How do they feel? And, you know, the poor. How do you have compassion on the poor? Well, I, for myself, have already been poor. I would say it that way, you know. And we probably, all of us, have felt it or know what it is. Poor is maybe sometimes, if we think about just poor without money, it's just literally without enough money to reach around. So we say we're poor, you know. But compassion on the down and out, and compassion on the hurting. I believe that's is in all that. And then looking in Luke 10. And I'm thinking there, the parable there where Jesus said, this rich young ruler came to him and he said, willing to, in verse 29 of 10, and willing to justify himself, said unto Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" And Jesus answering said, A certain man went down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell among the thieves, which stripped him of his raiment and wounded him and departed, leaving him half dead. And by chance there came down a certain priest that way. And when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. And likewise a Levite, when he was at the place, came and looked on him and passed by on the other side. And a certain Samaritan, as he journeyed, came where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion on him. And he went to him and bound up his wounds, pouring in oil and wine, and set him on his own beast, and brought him to an inn and took care of him. And the story goes on. He paid for the room and board there, and he says, you know, if there's any more money you need, I'll leave you my credit card, and you can charge the bill there. But he had compassion. And I was going to turn to that where Jesus, when he went out and fed the 5,000, he's seen all these people, and Leland read that. He's seen all these people, and he had compassion on them because they were as a sheep without a shepherd. And, you know, there is two types of shepherds. There's the shepherds that have compassion, and there's shepherds that have not compassion. There's, in the Old Testament, talks about that. There's a shepherd that scatters the sheep. And, you know, if they're about dead, he'll finish them off, you might say. You know, that's just in that language. But there's shepherds that have compassion. And in this setting, and I guess I'm preaching to me, myself here, and all of us here this morning, probably in light of what's all taking place and having a mission, outreach, we're not going to do it unless we have compassion. I'll just say that up front. And I don't know where you're at and all that, and I'll just say I'm in both classes, so I'll be on both sides. But look at the story here. The Levite, when he came, and he was a shepherd. He was a man of God. He was part of the priest in the Levites. You know, he was a priest. So he was busy, and he probably had his... I'm putting some things here, but he may have had a mission in Jerusalem that they were busy with. So he was on his way taking care of that mission. And let's see, the Levite and who else came by? And another certain priest, you know, I could say he probably was a minister of a church somewhere and he was busy. That's how it can be. But then this Samaritan comes by, Jesus said, this Samaritan comes by and he had compassion. So he did something about it. And I trust that as whatever side we're on, as we think of mission, as we think of looking out on the needs of others, you know, the Bible says in Philippians, look not on your own needs, but also on the need of others. That sometimes, sooner or later, surely it will strike a chord of passion in us. You know, that yes, there is other needs around us. Yes, there is other areas that need the gospel. Yes, there is others in that. And now going maybe a little bit more to the life of Christ, here, let's turn to Matthew 9:36. And I thought it was interesting. I just looked up the word compassion, and then this was the first one that came up. And then it spoke so much to me. And I trust that it will grip each one of us. So whichever side you voted after you read this and think about it, you know, it should change our hearts. Matthew 9:36. Here it's again kind of the same 5,000, but it's in Matthew. But he said, and when he saw the multitude, he was moved with compassion on them because they fainted and were scattered abroad and as sheep having no shepherd. Then saith he unto his disciples, the harvest truly is plenteous, but the labors are few. Pray ye therefore the Lord of harvest that he will send forth labors into his harvest. And I guess as I read that, it almost made me weep. You know, that there is work to do. And the world is out there. Another place Jesus said that the harvest is white. And if you're any type of farmer, which I love farming, you know, when the wheat is ripe, I say wheat because I'm more of a wheat farmer. I lived here and grass still seems a little different, but I like wheat. So the wheat is ready to cut. And I've been in harvest crews, you know, where you go, you know, you started in Texas and came up through Oklahoma and the wheat is ready. There was an intensity there. The wheat was ready, and sometime you'd pull into a town and there was 25 combines there and you felt pretty hopeless of getting a job. But everybody wanted their wheat cut at the same time, so they hired you. And or if you had a line of somebody that depended on you year to year, that the wheat got cut. They depended on you to come and harvest. So here that Jesus is saying, and he just looks at all the people, and it seems like we can't already look around without saying, wow. There is many places that don't have the gospel. There is much that we could do. But you know, the labors are few. Then he says, pray ye therefore the Lord of harvest. Pray. What should I pray? That you'll go? What should I pray? That a church in Halsey will start a mission? You know, what are we going to pray? Jesus is telling us, and it seems like it just hits us, you know, pray ye therefore the Lord of harvest, that he will send forth labors unto his harvest. Well, I think we can pray, and I believe there's legitimate causes and reasons that, you know, we, and I just say, Brother Silas, if it's okay, he can pray that there will be people to go on the mission field. But he knows full well that he can't go himself. I'm just saying that. So we all can have our excuses or reasons, but there I just picked him because he's older. He knows he can't pack up and move to Walla Walla like we did the last time, just say. But pray ye therefore. So if you're not voting for it, can you at least pray for the work? That's, I guess, the thought that struck me in that. Can we at least pray that the Lord will send forth workers to the harvest? You know, there's, and we can excuse ourselves and say, and I believe it's true, there's wheat right around here to be cut. There's lots of it. And I guess in this message of compassion, whether we go or whether we stay, will God stir up our hearts more for compassion of the lost around us? Whether we're here or whether we go in that, I see that. Pray ye therefore that the Lord of harvest will send forth a harvest. And you know the story of the 5,000, I guess I had to think of that on both sides. You know, Jesus said he had compassion on the people and they were hungry, and then he said, well, feed them. And the disciples said, well, how are we going to feed these people? There's too many, and it would take a year's wages, and there's not even bread out here. Well, what do you have? And in that little, you know, sometimes we always think of the story, we think of the little boy that had 5 loaves and 2 fishes, and he said, well, here, we have 5 loaves and 2 fishes. And Jesus said, well, give me that. And he blessed it, and it fed the 5,000. I believe that still can be that way for a mission. Why would I pray against it, but for it, at least let's give the 5 loaves and 2 fishes and see what God can do. And God can bless it, and he fed the 5,000, and there was food left over. Then go into Matthew 18:33, and this is a chapter we think about as the forgiveness chapter. You know, that if you go talk to your brother and he forgives, but it brings out the thought of compassion. Matthew 18:33. Shouldest thou not also have compassion on thy fellow servant, even as I had pity on thee? And it's kind of entwines with forgiveness. It kind of works together, you know, the compassion and forgiveness. And I believe that's the whole thought of, you know, when you look at Galatians 5:1, you know, if a brother falls, restore him. In the thought of having compassion on him, shouldest thou not also have compassion? You know, I sure enjoy it when the Lord, you know, reflects it and gives it to me. Excuse me. Matthew 20, and I'm basically just in Matthew here, as we think of the times when Jesus had compassion. Matthew 20, 30, verse 30 to 34. And behold, 2 blind men sitting by the way, when they heard that Jesus passed by, cried out, saying, have mercy on us, O Lord, thou son of David. And the multitude rebuked them because they should hold their peace. But they cried the more, saying, have mercy on us, O Lord, thou son of David. And Jesus stood still and called them and said, What will ye that I should do unto you? And they said unto him, Lord, that our eyes may be opened. So Jesus had compassion on them and touched their eyes, and immediately their eyes received sight, and they followed him. A miracle, you know, we say, and we focus on that. But look at the word there. Jesus had compassion on them, and that's why he moved and did it. And I guess when you think of the clinics that could start it in a lot of the countries that have not, you know, the luxury of America, you know, that the and all that. And then it takes people to go do that, you know, and I had to think of charity there in Haiti. You know, and I've seen it where they had boxes of eyeglasses, old eyeglasses, stuff that we didn't want in America, and they literally take them to them countries, and then people put them on, and they say, great, I can see good now, you know, they're not They didn't go to an eye doctor and get it all prescribed and do everything right, you know, but it helped. So they used them. Well, that's not the same as healing their eyes like Jesus did, but it's doing what you can and having compassion on those that can't see. And then in Luke 15, verse 20, the parable of the prodigal son, you know, the father seeing his son coming ran and fell on his neck and had compassion on him and forgave him. And that's tied into that. Forgiveness and had compassion. He ran unto them. And then in that same setting, I like where Jesus says, and there's joy in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner that repenteth. When you think of us having our little bit of compassion, you might say, and warning someone or talking to someone, compassion of helping them. Well, there's joy in heaven over one sinner that repents in heaven, it says. Then in 1 John 3:17, it talks about shutting up our bowels of compassion. And I believe that's possible. I believe, you know, sometimes it's just pretty easy to turn so we don't see it, or turn so we don't hear it, or act like we don't see it. Sometimes I guess we do, but, you know, when we see needs around us. And having said that, you know, I think we all probably here as families, you know, have needs in our own families, when I say it that way. But, you know, that parable of who is our neighbor, the Samaritan there, it wasn't just another hosteler that he went and helped. It probably wasn't just another, you know, if you follow what I'm saying, somebody from the Halsey Mennonite Church. It was probably somebody that was just not in our circle, period, you know. But compassion breaks down those lines is what I wanted to maybe bring out in that parable there, and I forgot. It wasn't that he just wasn't part of that the mission out of Jerusalem or this church. Compassion is, it's there for people when there's needs. 1 John 3:17. But whosoever hath this world's good and seeth his brother have need, and shutteth up his bowels of compassion from him, how dwelleth the love of God in him? And that's a question we'll all have to answer for ourselves. How dwelleth the love of God in him if we see others that have needs and then we shut up our bowels of compassion from that? 1 Peter 3:8. And I like this one. It's in the setting of the home. When I read it, anyhow, it seems like that we're to have compassion one on another, with another. 1 Peter 3:8. And I believe it starts there with husbands and wives in the home. That's what makes a home, a husband and a wife. So it's the husband having compassion on the wife and the wife having compassion on the husband. And why I say that in chapter 3, it talks about the wives. Then in verse 7, it says, likewise, ye husbands, dwell with them according to knowledge, giving honor unto the wife as unto the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers be not hindered. Finally, be ye all of one mind, having compassion one of another. Love as brethren, be pitiful, be courteous, not rendering evil for evil or railing for railing, but contrariwise blessings, knowing that ye are therefore called, that ye should inherit a blessing. And it, again, you know, we say, well, we love our wives. You know, we can give them flowers or we can do this, and that's fine, and you should probably. But, you know, compassion. You know, after the meal is done and after you sit down and you're ready to have a nap, you know, and you see your wife still out there working and doing dishes. Compassion gets you up and out there in the kitchen and helps the wife. And you shouldn't probably do too much of that one time. They can get used to it, but it's good. But where's compassion? You know, and the wife for the husband sometime, you know, when the extra hard day, can you have something ready for him, you know, a meal that's ready and he comes home and, you know, he needs a little comfort. And be careful how much you do of that too. But it's compassion in the home. And if we don't have it in the home, where are you going to start? If you don't practice it in the home, where are you going to start? And I believe that's why it seems like in the home setting here, then it goes to the church setting. Show a little compassion. Get up and do something for somebody, you know. That's really what the line is. You know, we can say love, 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 but it's without kind of motivating or without the compassion, it's not that much. It's good. And I'm guilty of all this as much as anybody. But, you know, either we're doing a church like after Christ or we're not really like Christ. And that's where, you know, it's just that simple. We're either doing that and And having said that, I want to go now to, as we think of compassion and mission, I want to turn to Hebrews chapter 7. And here we can get a pattern for missions or home in that. And we could have said a lot more in the home, you know, on compassion and how it works. You know, it works in forgiveness. When one fails, the other is ready to forgive because they have compassion on each other. And if it doesn't work there, it's not going to work in your churches, in our churches. It's not going to work nowhere, really, if it's not going to be practiced in the home. I'll say that. Now in Hebrews chapter 7. This was in preaching, I remember years ago when I was young in Montana, and I was visiting with Brother Wilbert. And, you know, I said, sometimes it seems so hard to know what to preach and, you know, and whatever. Then he kind of listened to me and then he kind of said, well, if you think you're going to be original, you know, and that was kind of, you know, you didn't really want to copy somebody else or, you know, you're that, I don't know, idealistic. You just thought you'd come up with everything fresh and new, you know. He said, you know, that probably won't happen. You know, you probably hear and see things. And I'll admit it wasn't long ago, even as far as this sermon on Melchizedek, that really blessed me. And maybe some of you heard it, and I'm just bringing that in, the compassion and how to have a mission and thinking about us as a church here. So here we have Melchizedek. And I thought it was interesting, and I guess the thrust of it is, if we'd sum it up, Christ came and is a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. And it says it here in chapter 7 and the last part of 6, 9 times. Forever and after the order. And I know for us as not being Jewish people and not being in Israel and not being an Israelite, and I believe that's why even in Romans it doesn't mean that much to us because we're not Jews. I'll just say it that way. And having been to Israel not long ago and was seeing and coming from the Old Testament, and now Jesus Christ has taken away all that Moses and the law stood for and said, it's hard to accept. I mean, that it is. Now here we have a Jesus, it says the last in verse 20, and that's where I'm getting this from. And even Jesus made a high priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. Well, who's Melchizedek? Aaron was the priest, brother of Moses. Aaron was the priest in the Old Testament, and only the Levites, only the family of Levites could be priests. It was wrong for anybody else. In that time when David did something in the temple, you know, he went in and ate some of the bread. Really, it was condemned under law. He should have died, but it was, you know, he was hungry, so it seemed like that then it was okay. But I'm just bringing it out that only the Levites were priests. And now here we have Jesus is the high priest. So the Jewish people, how are you switching that on us? And I'll just say, being in Israel, and some, if you lean the other way, bless you. But why would in this future generations, why would we go back to the Leviticus priest when we have a high priest that cannot, was just touched with all of our infirmities, like Jesus Christ? We're not going to go back to the order of Leviticus priest because now we have a priest. If you read all the way through Hebrews, we have a priest that is so much better. He liveth in forever and ever making intercession for us. Every other priest, though he was full of compassion, died. You know, and went one man to the next, to the next, to the next. But now we have Jesus Christ as our high priest. But after the order of Melchizedek. So where do you read about Melchizedek? Turn back to Genesis chapter 14. And here's a man that says that we don't know his father and mother. We don't know his ending. We don't know much about him. Right here is all about we know about him, of what he did here. And I trust, I'll just, and maybe we, to get a picture of the story. And the one thing that I'll say that stood out to me, that here Abraham and Lot were on the scene, and the devotions brought out the thought that God did tempt Abraham. Well, I believe in this setting here in this story, God tempted Abraham here also. I don't say it quite that way, but it was a temptation, and I'll get to that. But here, Abraham and Lot had such great herds, and they separated, and Lot went down into the plains there by Sodom, and then there was five kings, I believe, that came and took Sodom and the kings and all the people and all the goods and went away. And this is where Abraham gets involved. And Abraham, a messenger came to Abraham, and he's, he said, hey, they took Lot, your nephew, and they took all the goods, and they took off, you know, with all this riches and stuff. And Abraham heard it in verse 14. And when Abraham heard that his brother was taken captivity, he armed his trained servants, born of his own house, 318, and pursued them unto Dan. And he divided them against them, and he pursued them day and night, and then he captured them. And in verse 16 says, and he brought back all the goods, and also brought back his brother Lot and his goods, and the women also and the people. So now to get a picture of this, when a king in the Old Testament, and probably still true the same, when an army overtook another army and captured it, everything they had was now Abraham's. And Abraham did this only with 318 men, but all this riches was his. And I had to think there was other stories in later on, and you probably know them. Wasn't it about 3 days the armies died? I think God killed them all, and then they hauled 3 days of all their supplies, you know, whether it was the clothing and the riches and the jewels. 3 days work it took to clean up that army. So we don't know how much riches was here, but five kings, five great powers of the then world, and this was all Abraham's. Abraham had won all this, you might say, in the battle. Now, reading in verse 17, that was started with Melchizedek, and the king of Sodom went out again to meet him after his return from the slaughter of Chedorlaomer, and the kings that were with him in the valley of Shinviv, which is the king's dale. And Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought forth bread and wine, and he was the priest of the Most High God. And he blessed him and said, blessed be Abraham, the Most High God, possessor of heaven and earth. And blessed be the Most High God, which hath delivered thine enemies in thine hand, and he gave him tithes of all. Now Abraham gave tithes of all. Abraham somehow recognized this king, Melchizedek, king of Salem. And in my Bible, and it was brought out in that sermon, but this was an actual man. Melchizedek was an actual king and of Salem or Jerusalem. And I thought that was interesting, because in all the Jewish putting all this together, when Abraham offered up Isaac, they say that was on Mount Moriah. That's right where the temple in Jerusalem is actually built. And here Melchizedek is actually supposedly the king of Jerusalem. But David took over that city years later. David took that city and made it his capital. But here's Melchizedek. And then in verse 21, and says, and the king of Sodom said unto Abraham, give me thy persons and take the goods to thyself. And Abraham said unto the king of Sodom, I have lifted up mine hand unto the Lord, the Most High God, the possessor of heaven and earth, that I will not take from thee a thread, even a shoe latch, and that I will not take anything that is thine, lest thou shouldest say, I have made Abraham rich. Save only that which the young men have eaten, and the portion of the men which went with me. And he names these people, and they got their portion. Now, what was the work of Melchizedek here? We read this here, and we say, you know, and I've read it many times, and now how was Jesus a pattern after Melchizedek, king, a priest here? And it's only 3 points, and I may give you a test afterwards, see if you're a missionary. And Melchizedek, king of Salem. And notice that here he's, and if we'd have read more in Hebrews, it talks about Melchizedek being a servant of the Most High God. So Melchizedek, king of Jerusalem or Salem, was busy. But God came to him, whether in a night or whenever, and he said, you go out there. And this wasn't just a chance meeting with Abraham, you know, and stuff. He told Melchizedek, you go out there and bless Abraham. You go out there and talk to Abraham. You got to go out there and speak to Abraham, because he needs it now. And so Melchizedek did that. But notice what he did. So after coming back with all this spoil and his men tired from the battle, you might say, Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought forth bread and wine, and he was the priest of the Most High God. So that's the first one. What can we do as a mission and needs around us? He brought forth bread and wine. He met the needs, and we've just read that in the miracles of Jesus. What was some of the first things he did? He met their needs. He fed the people. The first miracle he did, which was, you know, change water into wine at that wedding. And for me, it would have been easy to say, drink water the rest of the time. You don't need no more wine, you know, but he didn't. He had compassion on them. He gave them what they needed. But here, Abraham coming back, needed this. And we're reading some of this into this. But after a great victory, Abraham needed a little bit of encouragement, bread and wine. So Melchizedek was there and did that. Then the next point is speaking a word of warning or a word of encouragement. And you know, what mission is there in a sense, or what church is there? If we're just here because of the bread and the fishes, you know, Jesus said, rebuked his disciples, some of the people that followed. He said, you're just following me because of all the good things. But take, you know, can we take a word of warning? Can we take a word of rebuke? And here it seems like that God spoke to Melchizedek and said, go and warn Abraham. Now, where do I get that? You could say. He said, Abraham needs a little bit of encouragement now. Abraham needs a word of warning, if you say it that way. And it says, and he blessed him and said, blessed be Abraham of the Most High God. Then he said, Abraham, look at, God is the possessor of heaven and earth. He says this, and blessed be the Most High God, which hath delivered thine enemies into thine hand. And he gave him tithes of all. So he pointed Abraham to God. He said, listen, God gave you these riches. God gave you these the victory. It's not on yourself. And what was Abraham feeling? You know, he was feeling good after the victory. He might have been feeling a little bit proud. I've done this with my 318 people. I'm pretty good, you know. What could I do from here out? And all this spoil is mine. All this riches is mine. I am a rich man. And you know, to our shame, way too often, we're just like the foolish man. What will I do with all this riches? What am I tempted to do with it? What are you tempted to do with it? Well, let's tear down our barns and build bigger. Right? Let's keep going, you know. I got all this riches and let's keep growing this thing and let's go. But Melchizedek came to warn Abraham. And I think the warning is there for us there too. This, all these things that you have is God's. You can leave it today or you're going to leave it tomorrow. You know, that's what you might as well say. If we die tomorrow or we die today, we're going to leave everything anyhow. Or we can leave it willingly. And he gives that warning. And then notice in verse 21 that, and it seems like this king of Sodom was there also. And kind of listening to this, sounds like he was there. And he says to Abraham, give me the persons and take the goods. So give me back my people. You can keep all the riches. And Abraham said to the king of Sodom, I have lifted up mine hand unto the Lord, the Most High God, the possessor of heaven and earth. About exactly the same words that Melchizedek said to him. Abraham, blessed be Abraham of the Most High God, possessor of heaven and earth. So Abraham's turned around and he won the victory. He said, okay, I will not take anything. This is all God's anyhow, so you can take it with you. You can have your people back. You can have all your money back. Abraham, you know, when God tempted Abraham, you know, with his son, he was faithful, but it seems like God tempted Abraham here. With all these riches, what are you going to do with them? What are you going to do? And it seems like Melchizedek, and, you know, we can read a lot into that, but one thing, remember, in Hebrews it does say that Jesus was a priest after the order of the most of Melchizedek. And what did Jesus do? He spoke words of warning to people, whether they listened or not, you know, that was up to them. And then the third point of a true servant, and it's just kind of simple, it's just a hidden servant. And Jesus, when he came onto this earth, he said it more than once that all the things that he's doing, the glory is for God, you know. And so here in this setting, you know, we don't even read much about Melchizedek until Psalms 110. And then it just says that it prophesies it. How did David know? But he wrote it down. God told him, I believe, that Jesus was going to be a priest after the order of Melchizedek. In Psalms 110, that's in. But that's it. And Jesus, as a man coming to the earth, you know, you might say, that's in a sense, he didn't come to seek his own glory. He didn't come to rise up glory to himself, but he always said the glory went to the Father. So that's the test. If you're going to have a mission or you're going to have a church, is God getting the glory or are we going to take the glory? Now for the test. Which of you young children couldn't give a glass of water to someone if they're thirsty? If there's anybody here, raise your hand if you feel like you couldn't give a glass of water. Jesus says that if you give a glass of water in my name, you'll get the prophet's reward. And that's, you know, being kind to your teacher a little bit, or if she has a hard day, giving her an apple out of your lunch. You know, I'm just saying, you know, but that's being kind to those around you. Giving a glass of water. Nobody raised their hand? Here's your chance. How many of you can't speak a word that the Lord lays on your heart to somebody? A word of encouragement. If, you know, and I know that happened, and I know I failed already. You know, it seemed like years ago, I remember, go talk to this neighbor, and I never did, you know. But, you know, just some things like that. And that's what Melchizedek, you know, spoke a word of encouragement, and it had a warning in it. God's word is like a two-edged sword. It's sharp. It divides. But, you know, when it speaks to me, and sometimes it don't even speak to the rest of you, it'll cut to my heart. And sometimes you'll feel it in your lives that the word of God speaks to you, and maybe everybody else, you know, they're not really noticing it that much. But that's how God's word is. It will speak to us. And then, okay, who wants the glory? How many of us can to have a mission or have a church and it would be their greatest success? And there would be hundreds of souls saved. Could we still give God the glory? Wow. Well, you're all certified missionaries. But listen, without compassion, you know, we can have missions. And, I, you know, we've all seen it. We can have churches. We can have big churches. We can have churches that, you know, you might be a bishop over 7 or 8 churches like they do some places. I'm just saying that. But if you don't have compassion and you're not going to help the people, then you're not really a shepherd anyhow. You know, it's just that simple. A shepherd, in the true sense, cares for his sheep. Jesus said that so plainly. You know, my sheep hear my voice and I care for them. You go to the parable of the 99. Why would you leave all 99 sheep and wander around in the dark looking for the one lost one, you know? It's just, you know, we can say, well, it doesn't make sense, but it's compassion that did that. And it's compassion that saved every one of us, you know, the compassion and love of God that He, leaving the glory of heaven, come down to rescue us. May God bless each one. And why don't we stand for prayer?